Okay, before we get too far into today's episode, I got some exciting news to share. We've officially launched a website where you'll discover a hub for all things Star Wars. From the latest news to exclusive merchandise. And here's the best part. For just $5 a month, you can join our membership program to access all of our episodes completely ad-free and all new episodes a few days earlier. But that's not all. Our members enjoy a treasure trove of content that'll never hit the airwaves of this show, including special episodes, full audio comics, and books. So if you're craving extra content or eager to listen to an episode early without interruptions or simply just want to grab a Sway t-shirt, head over to www.swaypodcast.com. That's SWAAPODCAST.com. Don't miss out on your chance for exclusive content and so much more.
What grill do you have?
You're now tuned in to the Talk to Sway. So just sit back and ready to play. Let me take your thoughts far, far away. Now let's hear what Darth Vader has to say.
We would be honored if you would join us.
What's going down, Far Far Away family? It's your narrator, Kyle, gearing up to launch you into the universe of awe, which is known as Star Wars Audio Archives, starting with Episode 1 of Into the Dark, the third installment of the High Republic series, Phase 1. Imagine this is the opening chapter of an ancient space tomb, where every turn of the page whispers secret heroism and moral dilemmas, and puzzles strong enough to tip the cosmic scales. Here we're not just beginning a story, we're embarking on a voyage across the stars. Our opening is a canvas painted with the strokes of alliance and rivalry, etching paths of personal discovery that lead to enlightenment. Brace yourself for an expedition where every revolution builds the saga's foundation. So fasten your seatbelt, calibrate your imagination to light speed, and prepare to dive into the heart of legends and lore. Episode 1 is the first step into a much larger world, a place where every shadow and light is a story waiting to be told. Let's embark on this grand adventure. So here we go.
The galaxy is at peace, ruled by the glorious Republic and protected by the noble and wise Jedi Knights. As a symbol of all that is good, the Republic is about to launch Starlight Beacon into the far reaches of the Outer Rim. This new space station will serve as a ray of hope for all to see. But just as a magnificent renaissance spreads throughout the Republic, so does a frightening new adversary. Now, the guardians of peace and justice must face a threat to themselves, the galaxy, and the Force itself. Ah, pirates. Jorah Molly shook her head almost fondly. They never learn. The Togruta Jedi Master sat beside her Padawan in their PIR airspeeder as it swooped through the massive constructions that covered a good third of Coruscant in pursuit of a pirate skiff. In the decades since the latest building boom had begun on the planet, valuable ores and materials had been shipped and stored there. Tempting stuff for a pirate. And for many years, stealing a haul and getting away had been far from impossible. Yes, Coruscant was the central world of the Republic, one with a vast security force. But everything about the planet was vast, including its opportunities for concealment and escape. However, Coruscant was becoming a more ordered place, an even more important place, and already home to the largest of all the Jedi temples in the galaxy. Which meant Coruscant would be safer than ever before. About time the pirates learned that. Jorah opened her mouth to tell her Padawan what she sensed, that the pirates were going to try to surprise them by swooping upward. But Wraith was already guiding the airspeeder up and over the spiderweb of construction beams toward the brilliant sky.
His strength in the Force isn't remarkable, not among the Jedi, she thought as she studied her young human apprentice.
The wind blew his dark brown hair into even more of a nest than usual.
But Wreath works harder than almost any Padawan I've ever known. He tuned into my thoughts, not through his natural gifts, but through effort of will. And he did it faster than the naturally gifted ever manage. He'll go farther than many of them. Perhaps in ways he doesn't yet understand. Their airspeeder crested the ridge of construction, and for a brief moment, Jorah and Reef were treated to a panoramic view of the glittering structures of Coruscant, many of them crowned with silvery scaffolding, but more of them complete, whole and shining. Sunlight streamed through the wispy clouds in the pale sky, painting everything pink and gold. Most beautiful of all to Jorah's eyes were the five spires of the Jedi Temple on the horizon. Then the pirate skiff surfaced from the maze of buildings, its pilot realizing the mistake too late. Reef immediately fired a tow cable. Its magnetic clamp shot out and seized the skiff's hull. Calmly, Jorah said, "Do you know the engine specs for that skiff?" "I don't, Master Jorah." Reef looked puzzled, then dismayed as realization set in. His last word was cut off as the skiff dove desperately toward the ground level, easily overwhelming the airspeeder's engines and dragging the Jedi down with it. Reef's hand went to the control to release the clamp and remained in place, ready to act. He already sensed what Jorah had planned then. She smiled as she braced herself, the rushing wind sending her striped mantle streaming behind her. Her eyes focused on the skiff's cockpit, on the just visible silhouette of the pilot so frantic to get away that he might kill them all in the process. "This is not how it will be," Jorah whispered to herself, and then jumped. Her leap took her from the airspeeder to the skiff itself. Jorah's boots slammed hard against the cockpit as she ignited her lightsaber. Its blue blades slashed through the air, through the cockpit, slicing a hole. A faint shudder told her Reef had released the cable. "Perfect timing," she thought. The force strengthened her grip, allowing her to hang on even as the skiff swerved violently in an effort to throw her free. Reef kept the airspeeder just behind them. What had begun as an accident was now breathtakingly close pursuit. Jorah punched through what remained of the cockpit opening and leapt inside. The pirates were so cowed by her attack, or perhaps by her lightsaber, that none of them insulted her by even pulling a blaster. However, the skiff continued plummeting toward the fast-approaching surface. In less than 2 minutes, they'd be killed in a pulverizing crash. "Please take the ship out of this dive," she said, "and report to the nearest docking station for a rest." The Rodian pilot hesitated. In that split second, she sensed the anger within him. Did it burn hot enough to make him sacrifice his own life and that of his comrades just to take her along? Maybe. Jorah waved her free hand through the air, a casual gesture.
"You want to report to the nearest docking station?"
"We want to report to the nearest docking station,"
the pirates intoned in unison, and the pilot obediently took the ship out of its dive. Jorah looked over her shoulder to see Reef falling in behind them, his grin as bright as the sunlight above them.
"A pity to take away that smile for a time," Jorah thought. "But I can't put this announcement off much longer."
She was able to put it off another hour. It took that long to get the pirates arrested and processed by the appropriate authorities and to check out the PIR airspeeder to make sure it hadn't been damaged. Reef had flown it well in challenging conditions. He, however, remained focused on his one mistake.
"I'll start on an in-depth study of engine specs tomorrow," he promised as the two of them strolled away from the station through the myriad booths and kiosks that made up a kind of permanent street market in the area. A group of Bith all the way in from the Outer Rim mumbled over their mugs of port in a storm as the Jedi passed.
"I've already come up with a list of ship models I should concentrate on, if you want to look it over."
"That's not our highest priority at the moment."
Jorah clasped her hands behind her back.
"We've spent a great deal of time on Coruscant, you and I. You've traveled much less than most other Padawans your age."
"But we have traveled,"
Reef said.
Enough for me to know that the whole galaxy isn't like Coruscant, and for me to know that I like it here best. Besides, I understood that when you chose me, Master Jorah. Not many Padawans are lucky enough to learn from a member of the Jedi Council. Traveling a little less as a result, it's not that big a sacrifice to make.
Jorah wasn't letting him get away with that.
It's no sacrifice at all for you. It would take a gravity well to pull you out of the archives some days.
Reef grinned as he ducked his head.
Okay, fair enough. That's one of the reasons I've always thought we were well matched. I too. Yet the time has come for each of us to expand our horizons. I've taken on a new assignment, one that will lead us far from Coruscant for many years to come. We'll be traveling to the frontier.
As Jorah had anticipated, Reith's first reaction was dismay. He half stumbled over the curb in front of the Bilbringi food kiosk.
But the Council...
I'll soon be leaving the Council for the foreseeable future, she explained.
This assignment is important enough to justify long-term involvement, and I have volunteered. It's work that plays to my diplomatic strengths. Still, I wouldn't have taken this on if I didn't think it was important for you, too.
Why? Reef blurted out. How could it be important to leave Coruscant for a place in the middle of nowhere?
A place where Jedi once gave their lives to protect the people of that area of space, Jorah said. That is not nowhere. That is worthy of any honor we can give it. Of course, I didn't mean any disrespect.
His face had paled, which made the freckles on his nose and cheeks stand out. Jorah liked it when humans had some face markings of their own.
I only meant that I've been working as an archivist, trying to be a good one, and it doesn't seem like the frontier would need many of those.
She tilted her head, considering.
You might be surprised, but I intend for you to be more than an archivist, Reef.
More gently, Jorah added,
You prefer to concentrate on those areas where you believe effort counts more than talent. But you have more than enough talent for anything you set your mind to. And effort always counts for any task in any place.
Doesn't it count more here, where it does the most good? Jorah shook her head in fond disbelief.
My first Padawan craved endless adventure. My second one would happily avoid it. What both of you actually needed was the same thing. Balance. I found it for him, and I found it for you.
At least she hoped she'd helped Dez find it. Sometimes hearing of his exploits on Zaituin and Christophsis, she wondered. The depth of Reith's dismay would have been comical if it hadn't been so heartfelt. That was one thing they never told you about being a master. That sometimes teaching a hard lesson hurt more than learning it. She said,
Tell me, Reith, why can you not cross the Kyber Arch by yourself?
Reith frowned.
Do I need to?
Jorah didn't reply. The Kyber Arch stood within one of the vast meditation chambers of the Coruscant Temple. Each crystal in the arch was a Kyber crystal, one retrieved from the damaged lightsaber of a Jedi fallen in battle. As beautifully as it sparkled in the light, it was a reminder of the price their fellow Jedi had paid in the pursuit of justice over the past millennia. Thick at the bases, the very topmost curve of the arch had deliberately been left extremely narrow as a representation of the perils the Fallen had faced. Scaling and crossing the Kyber Arch was an advanced meditation technique. Most Jedi never attempted it, only those who felt called to do so by the Force. So if Reith insisted on taking her question literally, he would never have an answer. Literal, he remained.
I mean, I think I could cross it.
We've made our way across ropes and tethers skinnier than that. Do you want me to try? Reef looked hopeful again.
If I make it alone, does that mean we don't have to go to the frontier?
Neither you nor any other Jedi has ever crossed the Kyber Arch alone, Jorah said. Nor will anyone ever do so. When you know the answer why, I believe you'll understand why we're headed to the frontier.
Reef sighed. Frustration practically radiated from him, but he maintained control admirably. He managed to ask, "Where are we going? Specifically, I mean."
Jorah raised her head and looked into the sky as if she could see the stars beyond the sunset. "To the beacon of the Republic," she said. "To Starlight."
Reef Sylas was about to leave the Jedi Temple on Coruscant for his impressive new assignment on the frontier, and he was miserable about it.
"Cheer up!"
Kim insisted, clapping him on the shoulder and nearly making him spill the contents of his cup. Her face was flushed with the excitement of the farewell party that percolated around them.
"You're about to have an amazing adventure!"
"Adventure is usually a euphemism for going places that have lots of bugs," Reef said.
"I mean, I know bugs have their place in the Force and are living beings in their own right, but that doesn't mean I want them in my socks." Kim laughed at him. A couple of the colorful streamers decorating the Padawan's common area had gotten snagged on her lethorns.
"You realize at least half of the apprentices here would do almost anything for a placement on the frontier, right?"
In Reef's opinion, frontier was usually a euphemism for the middle of nowhere. But he didn't have the heart to debate with Kim any longer. It was hard enough pretending to be grateful for the big goodbye party his friends were throwing him. No, he was grateful. It could never be a bad thing to know that others cared about you and would miss you when you were gone. But Reef was in no mood for a party when all he felt was melancholy and the absolute certainty that he was being taken from the best place in the galaxy to one of the worst. Coruscant was the center of the known galaxy, literally and figuratively. Reef had always been grateful that was the temple he'd been sent to, that he'd had the privilege of growing up there, of learning directly from the members of the Jedi Council. His luck had continued when he'd been chosen as the Padawan of Jorah Mali, one of the most renowned knights of the age and a council member herself. This meant Reef had served on a handful of the most significant missions of the past few years. What he lacked in natural strength in the Force, which he'd been keenly aware of since he was hardly more than a toddler, he made up for by working hard, being trustworthy, and taking responsibility. The majority of apprentices were still hoping for a measure of independence when they turned 20. At only 17, Reef had already been trusted with tasks that his master said would have proved a challenge for even a full Jedi. But most of all, best of all, he'd had access to the Jedi Archives. Reef loved stories. He loved histories. He loved digging through records, learning what people had thought, said, and done in ages gone by. While the other Padawans were practicing their acrobatics or dueling with lightsabers, he'd been sitting up late with his digital texts. This made him the odd one out most of the time. Rather than conform, Reef embraced his bookish ways. He didn't see why anybody should think he was weird. Really, it was weird of them to expect that every youngling would turn out to have the same personality. When the searchers went around looking for force-sensitive infants, they only checked for potential ability, not temperament, and certainly not preferences. Nobody ever asked the younglings, "Would you like to become a swashbuckling heroic knight, or would you rather stay at home and read?" Some people, however courageous and capable they might be, still preferred reading stories to living them, and Reef was among that number. Until recently, Master Jorah had been more than understanding.
She'd always said the Order needed academics as much as it needed adventurers. And there were usually too many candidates for the latter, not enough for the former. She said she found it refreshing that Wreath went against the grain, so his assignments had always included plenty of time in the archives. Other Jedi based on Coruscant had even begun to leave open a particular carol with the silent understanding that it was Wreath's spot. Then, when no one ever would have expected it, Master Jorah took an assignment in the middle of nowhere. He protested, respectfully, of course, but he'd made his feelings known, not that it did any good.
"It will be healthy for you to stretch,"
Master Jorah had said with a smile,
"to test your abilities in other ways."
But Wreath had tested himself. He pushed himself to excel in every field, not just his favorites. Who was always near the top of the lightsaber duelist rankings, Padawan class, despite not liking dueling much at all? Wreath Silas, who had aced every single one of his exams, except that time when he'd been sick to his stomach. Also Wreath, who was the only apprentice in decades to master Gadolinian meditation practices before his 20th year.
"You're falling prey to pride," Wreath reminded himself. "Too much pride in yourself is proof that such pride is unwarranted."
It wasn't like this was all his master's idea. After his protests, she had admitted as much. Master Jorah had been selected by her peers to lead the Jedi mission on this new edge of the frontier. She'd be the Jedi Master in charge of Starlight Beacon, which would become fully operational any day now, to serve as a source of unity and allegiance throughout the newest sector of the Republic. His master deserved every honor she could be granted, and any duty she chose. Master Jorah would have turned down the assignment if she didn't want it. Clearly, she did. And where the master went, the apprentice followed. Master Jorah had left for Starlight weeks before, going on ahead of him so he could finish exams in the historiography course he'd undertaken. But they were done. His time on Coruscant was over. He'd considered flunking something on purpose, but couldn't quite bring himself to do it. "Why can no Jedi cross the Kyber Arch alone?" he asked himself for the umpteenth time. Wreath strongly wanted to have the answer ready for Master Jorah when he arrived at Starlight. Preparing for exams meant he hadn't had much time to meditate upon her question. He'd gone to study the arch itself, hoping that would spark some insight. Instead, he'd watched a Jedi cross the arch entirely solo and with no apparent difficulty. But he knew telling Master Jorah this wouldn't get him anywhere. He had a mission. Time to focus on it. Wreath told Kim, "I shouldn't complain about this assignment. About any assignment, ever." Kim managed to shrug and dance to the music simultaneously.
"Hey, it's not like everybody's equally ready to take on every possible assignment. That's why they're called assignments instead of, I don't know, volunteering opportunities.
I'm treating this like it was just a job."
By then, Wreath was talking to himself as much as to Kim.
"Being a Jedi is a calling. We're blessed with these abilities, these gifts, that we're meant to use for the good of all living things. That's just as true on the frontier as it is here on Coruscant."
It just didn't feel as true. Rolling her eyes, Kim said,
"Thanks for the lecture, Master Yoda. Now will you loosen up and have some fun already?"
Wreath tried. It was good to see everyone again. A handful of apprentices had gone on already. He was looking forward to reuniting with Imri in particular. And Vernestra had somehow gotten herself knighted already, which was amazing, so she'd be able to show them the ropes around Starlight. The amateur band a few apprentices had put together had actually practiced for once, which meant they sounded pretty good. He smiled, he danced, he drank certain beverages that, while not technically forbidden, were frowned upon for Padawans his age. A small measure of indulgence wasn't necessarily a bad thing, his master had said.
Such celebrations could be embraced when they brought people together in communion and harmony. But his gaze kept being drawn toward the one broad viewport in the room. Through its wide, transparent stretch, he could see the vibrant swirl of Coruscant, ships and speeders zipping by at various heights and angles. The spires of buildings, walkways so numerous they crisscrossed his view like an arachnid's web. As long as he could remember, Reith had loved this buzz of energy, the sense that the galaxy itself had a beating heart, and that he could feel its pulse all around him every single day. "Look within, my Padawan." That was what Master Jorah had said when Reith tried expressing this to her. "You're just reluctant to leave the only home you've ever known." That wasn't all of it, but it was part of it. A small part, but still. Knowing that changed nothing, Reith still wanted to be there and nowhere else. His chrono beeped, and his heart sank. Time to leave the party, the archives, the temple, the planet, and effectively, civilization itself. Reith didn't manage to disentangle himself from his friend's affectionate farewells for some time, which meant he left late for the spaceport. He dashed in, bags slung across his back, only minutes before their scheduled departure, yet somehow was the first person to show up at the designated berth. None of the other Jedi was there, nor was the ship itself. Did he have the wrong berth number? Reith was already frantically double-checking when he heard a voice he recognized.
"I was hoping I'd run into you."
Reith turned to see a young Jedi Knight approaching, Dez Rydan, striding closer with a bag over the shoulder of his traveling robes. It didn't look like he'd come to the spaceport to tell Reith goodbye. "Dez? What are you doing here?" Dez grinned as he said,
"Looks like we're on the same transport to the frontier."
"I didn't know you were assigned out there," Reith said. A young knight as illustrious as Dez could go anywhere he wished.
"Just came through,"
Dez shrugged.
"Actually, I requested this assignment only a few days ago. Lucky it got approved in time, huh?"
Reith nodded, which was easier and more tactful than saying, "Why does anybody in their right mind want to leave the known galaxy for the back end of beyond, much less Dez Rydan?" Probably it had to do with what Master Jorah had said about her second Padawan not wanting enough adventure, while her first craved adventure too much. Dez had been Master Jorah Mali's apprentice before she took on Reith. Sometimes younger knights became mentors and close friends to their former master's next charges. While Reith and Dez didn't have as tight a relationship as that, due to Dez's missions farther away in the galaxy, they were friendly and had practiced dueling together. This made Reith the envy of many Padawans, several of whom had chosen Dez as a role model. Despite Reith's more academic bent, he admired Dez as much as any of the others. Handsome, driven, tall, with golden skin and thick black hair, Dez made friends readily. Though he had passed his knighthood trials only 8 years previously, he'd already distinguished himself in both diplomacy and battle. "Where's the transport?" Reith said through the blur of those beverages he'd drunk, hoping Dez wouldn't notice his condition. He didn't fear a lecture in any case. Reith had it on good authority that Master Jorah had once caught Dez after a party at which far, far more beverages had been consumed, and that she didn't let him entirely off the hook until after he'd passed his knighthood trials. If Dez did notice the state Reith was in, he apparently saw no reason to point it out.
"It seems our original transport has blown a subalternator," said Dez. "Obviously, there's not much to be done with that. They claim to have arranged a substitute for us, but even the substitute is running late."
"What if they don't show?" Reith asked, half hoping the answer would be, "You get a whole new assignment and start over." Dez shrugged.
"We'll find another ship. Surely somebody's headed out there in another day or two."
"A day or two?"
Forget that. Orla Jereni folded her arms across her chest as she leaned against one of the nearby struts. She seemed to have appeared out of nowhere, almost luminous in the dark gray mundanity of the spaceport. While Wraith and Dez wore common mission attire, she had on snowy robes that were uniquely hers.
I'm ready to get out there. Trust me. There's at least one ship in this spaceport that wants our money badly enough to take us straight through the Maw if need be.
Wreath only knew Orla Jereni by reputation, but that reputation was a memorable one. Orla had recently declared herself a Wayseeker, a Jedi who would operate independently of the dictates of the Jedi Council. Some Jedi, from time to time, found themselves drawn to a period of solitary action, whether that meant meditation on a mountaintop, helping revolutionaries on a tyrant-ruled world, or even, in one legendary instance, becoming a minor singing sensation on Alderaan. All paths could lead to a deeper understanding of the Force, Wreath had heard. Personally, he didn't buy it. Still, if the Jedi Council respected Orla's decision, so would he. It seemed she felt her path led to the frontier. Her appearance was as strikingly individual as her choices. She was an Umbaran, with the stark, pale skin and high cheekbones common to that species. Her white robes were so pristine that they made her skin appear to have some small measure of color by comparison. Her hair, drawn back into a smooth knot, was a silver nearly as dark as black. Everything about Orla was angular, from the joints of her double-bladed lightsaber down to the corners of her knowing smile. Which she was giving Wreath right then, because he'd been caught staring. He ducked his head and hoped he wasn't blushing.
I wouldn't be so sure,
said Master Comac Vitus as he walked up to join the waiting group. His resonant voice beneath the hood of his golden robe made each word sound like a judge's weighty pronouncement.
Hardly any commercial traffic is headed towards Starlight, at least so far.
Wreath didn't know Master Comac well, though he would have liked to. The human man was renowned as both scholar and mystic. He seemed to have footnotes in half the books Wreath read, on topics as diverse as ancient Force rituals and high crisis hostage negotiations. None of that fully explained the mystique that hung about him. Master Comac stood at average height for a male of human or near-human species, but seemed taller because of his slender, angular build, the thick black hair he wore almost to his shoulders, and the gravitas of his presence. Until recently, Wreath had often seen Master Comac in the archives. He'd spent many hours seated not far away while both of them dove into holocron after holocron. So why would Master Comac have requested a distant duty posting on the frontier? Then it hit Wreath. Oh, right. He's also a folklorist. He'll be collecting the local histories and legends, probably. He wondered whether that might be dangerous for Master Comac, who was known to be highly sensitive to the Force. Going someplace so wild would surely expose them all to influences none of them had yet dreamed of. Only then did Wreath realize that Orla Jereni and Comac Vitus were walking toward each other, gazes locked, half-smiles on their faces.
Now see, I could have sworn,
Orla said,
that I once heard you say you'd never return to that patch of the galaxy again.
It doesn't matter how far we run or in what direction,
Master Comac replied.
In the end, we always come back to the beginning. Slowly, Orla nodded.
Yes. It's time for me to bring things full circle.
What could that mean? Wreath and Dez exchanged glances that suggested they were equally curious, but equally unwilling to pry. At that moment, Wreath's attention, and everyone else's, was distracted by a ship flying through the spaceport, rather low, then landing squarely on the pad where their transport ought to have been. It was an unusual ship, at least to Wreath. Its plating was dark blue, and its cockpit and engines both rounded to the point of being bulbous. Either it had been built a very long time before,
or the beings who built it didn't bother keeping up with technological developments, which was a troubling thought. As it settled onto the pad, the Jedi all exchanged glances.
"Looks more like a transport ship than a passenger craft," Master Komak said. "Who cares? It can make hyperspace, can't it?" Dez grinned as displaced air ruffled their hair and robes with a hiss. Reith frowned. "Maybe?"
No sooner had the ship settled onto the platform with a heavy metallic clunk than the hatch popped open. From it emerged a young girl, possibly Reith's age, no more than a year or two older, with tan skin. Her long brown hair hung free as she strode toward them wearing a normal pilot's coverall, an unusually neat pressed one, in the same distinctive shade of blue as the ship itself. On the sleeve was stitched a star-shaped crest in dark orange. She put her hands on her hips and studied them all as though disappointed.
"You're the passengers for Starlight? I thought we were picking up a bunch of monks or something. You look normal."
"We are your passengers and could be called monks of a sort," said Master Komak without any sign of surprise and only a slight pause before asking, "Are you the pilot?"
She grinned and pointed her thumb at the door.
"Of course not. I'm the co-pilot, Affy Hollow.
He's the pilot."
A teenage co-pilot seemed questionable to Reith, but when he looked in the direction she was pointing, all those questions vanished, replaced by far more pressing ones. Questions like, "Is that man's shirt open to the waist? Is he holding out his arms to us like he wants a group hug? Does he want a group hug? Is that guy on spice? No, how much spice is that guy on?"
"Beautiful children," said the pilot with a laconic drawl and a huge grin. "I'm Leox Jossi, and I hereby welcome you to the vessel."
There was a brief pause, which made Reith feel better. Even experienced Jedi weren't totally sure how to approach this guy. Dez finally stepped forward with his usual charm.
"Dez Radan, a pleasure to know you. What's the name of your ship?"
Leox and Affy shared a glance, clearly in on a joke that was about to be sprung.
"Already told ya,"
Leox said. He was a tall, tan, and rangy human, and his wavy, dark blonde hair looked as though it might not have been combed recently, possibly ever.
"Our vessel is called the Vessel. I named it not for the container itself, but the space within the container that gives it its value and purpose. To remind me to look beyond the obvious, you know?"
That sounds like Master Yoda on spice, Reith thought, which was either a very good sign or a very, very bad one.
"Love it,"
Orla said with apparently genuine relish.
"So, can we see our bunks?"
Affy made a face.
"About that. We're really more of a transport ship."
Master Komak gave Dez a look that seemed to say, "Just our luck."
"But we'll set up some partitions and cots for you."
Affy's narrow face lit up when she smiled.
"Just because we're a last-minute substitution doesn't mean we can't make it comfortable."
Leox cut in.
"That is, if you're not super particular about your personal definition of comfort."
Orla was the first to head toward the gangway.
"We are Jedi, Mr. Jossi. We don't require pampering."
Affy wrinkled her nose.
"So, are the Jedi monks or not?"
That stopped Reith short before he realized what this must mean. If they didn't even really understand what the Jedi were...
"You guys have to be from out on the frontier, huh?"
"To us, it's not a frontier, son."
Leox led them all after Orla into the vessel.
"It's home. But if you mean we're not used to this stretch of the galaxy, that's the truth.
Never been this close to the core before. Not by a long shot.
The Bind Guild handles shipping throughout the sector.
Affy sounded proud.
We're just one of the Bind Guild's ships. One of the smaller ones, honestly. But Scoverbind still gave us the first ever mission to Coruscant.
Reith, embarrassed by his tactlessness about the frontier, was eager to move the conversation forward. He felt sure that this was his opening to ask more about Leox and Affy, their ship, and why they'd earned this particular honor. He also found himself eager to explain the Jedi Order to people who somehow had never heard of it. But all conversation came to an end as Leox and Affy stopped their group at the edge of the cockpit.
"And this here,"
Leox said with a grin,
"is our ship's navigator, Geode."
Standing in one corner of the cockpit was a rock, about as tall as and slightly wider than Reith himself, dark gray with rounded edges and a flinty, flaky surface. Impressive, as rocks went, but still, it was just a rock, wasn't it? Reith frowned, sure this was some kind of weird joke.
"He's a Ventian, from Vent."
Leox lazily wrapped an arm around the rock's shoulders, just like anyone would with a friend.
"Geode's a nickname, by the way. Turns out you can't pronounce his name correctly unless you don't have a mouth."
Reith tried to parse that and failed. His main consolation was that Dez and Master Komak looked as confused as he felt. Orla Jareni, however, wore another of her knowing grins.
"Geode, huh?"
she said.
"Pleased to know you."
Affy briefly patted Geode's side.
"He's a little shy at first, but just wait until he gets to know you."
Leox cackled as he began leading them from the cockpit into the ship.
"Yeah, you just wait. But I don't want to give you fellas the wrong idea. Geode's a wild man for sure. But when it comes to steering the ship, he's all business."
"Solid, you might say."
Orla raised an eyebrow.
"Very well. Let's get a look at our bunks." "Well, we sort of have to create your bunks before you can see them,"
Affy admitted.
"Might as well get started."
"Great," Reith thought as he turned to follow the others.
"Not only am I headed to the back end of the galaxy, but the job of getting us through hyperspace belongs to a rock."
Sometimes the Force had a sense of humor. Within the half hour, their temporary quarters had all been built and assigned, and both passengers and crew had strapped in for takeoff. From where Reith sat, he could just glimpse the cockpit window, framed by control panels on one side, and the outline of Geode, still motionless, in what must have been the navigator's position. He had to crane his neck for that look, but it was worth it. This was the last time he would see Coruscant for many months, maybe a year. Reith refused to consider the possibility of his assignment lasting any longer than that. "Home," he thought. The word pierced him like an arrow. The Jedi were not taught to think of their temples as home, nor the planets where they'd been born. Yet the longing for a home was something that no sentient being could ever completely be free of. Reith didn't want to be free of it. He wanted to remember Coruscant just like this. Glittering, prosperous, ascendant.
"Do you resist your duty, my Padawan?"
Master Jorah's voice echoed within Reith's memory, gently amused, but pointed too.
"Surely that is unworthy of a Jedi."
"I want to do my duty,"
Reith replied in his own head, more clearly than he'd managed to express himself to Master Jorah when they'd last spoken.
"But I feel that my duty is here, on Coruscant, in the Archives."
He reminded himself that if something was telling him he shouldn't change his life at all, not even a tiny bit, that might not be the Force. But it might be. Reith scrunched down in his seat, clinging to his trust in the instincts that told him this entire trip was a bad idea, at least for him.
The other three Jedi all looked steady, even serene. He envied them their certainty, their steadfast connection to the Force. "When I've passed my trials," Wraith mused, "I'll be like them, steady and sure, with purpose, without any conflicts or doubts." Orla Jareni braced her hands on the thickly padded straps of her safety harness. This was rougher transit than she was used to, the kind of thing she'd hoped to find on the frontier and had found even closer to home. She wanted to see it as a good sign, but it was always a mistake to carve omens out of hope or dread. True omens created themselves and could not be mistaken when they came. No signs had yet appeared to prove that she'd made the right decision.
"Should I take it all back?" Orla wondered. "The Council wouldn't begrudge me that. If I tell them I was wrong, then you'll break faith with yourself. At least begin. Go back to the origins of it all. Then you'll know whether you've made the right decision or not."
The hood of a cloak could serve many purposes. Warmth, disguise, muffling of excess noise, and so on. At the moment of their departure, Comac Vitus had his pulled up as a shield. He was working too hard at mastering his emotions to worry about controlling every flicker of feeling that might appear on his face. The turmoil within had to be quieted before he undertook his responsibilities on the frontier. Volunteering for this had felt like the right move at the time. Not only was it important work, but it also took Comac back to the place where, in his mind, he had ceased to be a student and became a Jedi in truth. The knighthood trials had been only a formality after the Iram Arano crisis. But whenever Comac thought about those events, he had to fight back emotions no Jedi was supposed to experience.
"Going back will give you peace," he told himself. "You will finally be able to set those feelings aside for all time."
When Comac had told himself that on Coruscant, he'd believed it. Now, he wasn't as sure. Dez Rydan's long legs stretched out in front of him, crossed at the ankles, and he'd leaned his jump seat far enough back that he thought he'd had a chance of dozing off once they were underway. He'd expected this moment to feel more fraught, but instead, he was invigorated. The mere making of a decision sometimes had as much power as any action. Purpose clarified every move, every thought. Master Jorah would no doubt say that he should be more careful, that craving adventure as he did could lead to other cravings less compatible with the role of a Jedi. But resigning from the Zaitoine mission as suddenly as he had, questions had been asked and would be asked again.
"You did what you had to do," Dez thought. "If you'd stayed any longer, your frustration would have ripened into anger. Aren't you done second-guessing yourself yet?"
He thought he was. For the moment, that was true. But only time would tell how long his resolution would hold. In the cockpit, Leox nodded as the coordinates came up on their screen. A few strands of his meditation beads draped over the landing strut lever swayed and clicked as Affy eased the vessel off the landing pad and beyond the spaceport's confines into the rush of Coruscant.
"Good job, Geode," Leox said. "I'm about ready to get off this crazy planet. It's so built up and busy. Being outside still feels like being inside."
"I wasn't impressed either,"
Affy said.
"We didn't get to go around a whole lot, but still, Scover made it sound like this was the greatest place in the galaxy."
"Great in terms of scale."
Leox nodded toward the surface of the planet as they soared away from it.
"Not so much in charm, if you ask me."
Affy couldn't help feeling disappointed. She'd hoped to come back to Scoverbine with some insight or impression that would prove her worthiness to be one of the first members of the Guild to travel to the Galactic Core. There had to be something significant and fantastic about Coruscant, or it wouldn't be the most important of the Core worlds, would it? Whatever that was, Affy had missed it. Maybe their passengers would be interesting. If this Jedi thing meant much, at least she'd be able to tell Scover about that.
I just want to make you proud,
she thought to the guild's owner and her foster mother. The atmosphere thinned, the sky darkened. The vessel escaped Coruscant and slipped into space. Leox grabbed the hyperdrive levers and said,
Can't wait to get away from civilization.
With that, he pulled them into hyperspace, away from the galactic core, into the wild.
Wow, part one was amazing. And we just scratched the surface of Into the Dark, just dipping our toes into the mysteries of the High Republic. It's like we've opened up the first chapter of the biggest, most thrilling space adventure book you've ever seen. And trust me, it's only going to get better from here. We met some heroes, dodged a few asteroid fields of danger, and even uncovered a couple of secrets that are sure to shake up the galaxy in episodes to come. It's like we're gathering our crew, firing up the engines, and plotting a course for uncharted territories, with every star in the sky telling its own story. But I think that it's time for the quote of this episode, and it comes to us from Madison Singleton. She said, Success doesn't come from what you do occasionally, it comes from what you do constantly. All right, let's break it down. Okay, imagine success is building a strong, tall tower. Now, doing something just once in a while, like adding a brick to this tower every so often, it's going to take forever to see any real height, right? But if you're adding bricks every single day, consistently, the tower is going to shoot up. It's all about a steady effort, day in, day out. So how does this play out in real life? Think about someone that wants to get in shape. If they go to the gym or just work out every once in a while, whenever they feel like it, they're not going to see much change. But if they decide to exercise a little bit every day, stick to it and keep at it, they're going to get stronger and fitter. It's that commitment, that regular effort, that makes all the difference. It's the same with pretty much anything you want to get better at, like learning a new skill or saving money. Doing a little bit every day adds up, and over time you'll see real progress. So remember, success isn't about those big one-off efforts. It's about what you're willing to do every day, sticking to it even when it gets tough. That's how you build something amazing. And with that, we conclude part one of our space odyssey. Thank you for tuning in to the first part of Into the Dark. Stay tuned for more adventures, revelations, and growth as we journey further into this epic tale. Part two is coming your way in just a few days. So until next time, may the Force be with you. Thank you for listening to Star Wars Audio Archives. Join us next time for more Star Wars adventures. If you would like to listen to other episodes of the show, you can follow us on your favorite podcast directory. If you enjoyed the show, we would greatly appreciate a 5-star review. Once again, thank you for listening, and may the Force be with you. Sway was created by Keen Eye Shed and is a production of Pick Film Media. This show was produced by Quinn McDaniel and was distributed by Sway Cast Network. Star Wars was read to you by Jason Odega. Sound designed by Theodore Thompson. I am your host, Kyle, and we will see you next time in a galaxy far, far away.